First, it's time to have a chat with Bruce Shapiro, who's in a very good mood for the odd reason that the Mets have made it into the World Series.
Why is this an odd reason? I mean, my goodness, the New York Mets were for someone of my generation, any red-blooded New York area Jewish male of my generation, this is a big deal, Philip. you know, the New York Mets were born barely after I was. They were born in 1962 at a time when the legendary storied teams, the Dodgers and the Giants, had fled New York City, at a time when people were fleeing the cities. The Mets were established. Their uniforms even blended the colors of the Dodgers and the Giants. And for the first 8 years of their existence, and therefore through most of my childhood, the New York Mets were at the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of baseball. And then in 1969, when I was 10 years old, in the summer of 1969, the Miracle Mets came from last place in the National League to get into the World Series and, against all odds, beat the Baltimore Orioles. They were called the Miracle Mets, and this was the same summer as the moon landing and Woodstock. And to a 10-year-old, suburban Jewish male in the New York City area, the New York Mets made anything seem possible.
I apologize. I didn't realize that it was so profound an emotional experience for you. I now challenge you, given the fact we haven't got a lot of time tonight, to do a brilliant segue from the Mets to the Benghazi hearings.
Well, it's all about spectacle, isn't it? And if the Mets being in the World Series for only the third or fourth time since 1969 reminds us that anything is possible, the Benghazi hearings last week remind us of just how little is possible in Washington and how crabbed and small our politics have become. It was really quite the spectacle. Notable, first of all, for the lack of any new information produced whatsoever, the very clear implication that these are hearings, like the McCarthy hearings, very much without a legislative purpose, designed purely to humiliate or weaken a presidential candidate in this case, and also remarkable for the sheer endurance and staying power that Hillary Clinton reminded the country that she has. You know, it was even a number of Republican commentators pointed out that the Benghazi hearings seem to have been the biggest favor that the Tea Party could hand to Hillary Clinton, and in fact put on display the small universe and the trap that the what in Congress is called the Freedom Caucus is really the sort of the Tea Party cluster of candidates, the trap that they've set for themselves, this self-referential universe of bitterness and anger that is not grounded in fact or reality. And it, you know, after 9 hours or so of hearings, it ended up with one of the members of that caucus asking Hillary Clinton if she'd been alone all night the evening after the Benghazi attack, and you know, Secretary Clinton simply laughed out loud at what she thought was kind of a funny joke. It was a real reminder, as the Republican primaries have been, of the trap that today's GOP has set for itself with an agenda based on government doing nothing and with the perception of a series of enemies, starting with the Clintons on the left, as the defining fact of their existence.
Well, let's look at some of the developments in the ruins of the Republican Party. I understand that Ben Carson is now overtaking Trump in Iowa.
Well, in Iowa and in several other states. And what seems to have happened is that, Ben Carson is a fairly extreme person in his views, but he also has a very mild demeanor. And actually, among evangelical Christians, that demeanor, among evangelical Christian women in particular, that demeanor seems to be temporarily at least doing well. Now, I believe that both Carson and Trump will hit their kind of natural peak fairly early. And I really don't think that either one of them will have the staying power to make it to the nomination, though, this is a weird year.
But it's fairly obvious that Bush is not axiomatically the heir apparent. He's not handling the stress very well.
No, he really is not. He's had to fire a bunch of his staff and cut his budget, reorder his priorities because he just hasn't been moving in the polls. And he gave a quite petulant speech this week in Iowa in which he said almost literally, "I have better things to do than sit around and listen to this crap." He said, "If you want politics to accomplish nothing, then elect Donald Trump." He's now defining himself against Trump, something he really never thought he would have to be doing. And it is showing him as someone who simply expected to walk into the nomination. Now, he still has a lot more money than any of the other candidates. And I do think that as the secondary candidates gradually run out of money and fall off, it will come down to a probably Bush, Rubio, Trump field with Carson in there as a symbolic candidate for the evangelicals up until the end. I think that's how it's going to look. But this is not a year. This is a populist year, and therefore this is not a year in which the aristocratic republicanism represented by the Bush family, the dynasty, the one dynasty we've got in American politics, it's really multi-generational, has natural pull. This is a year of anger. This is a year in which income inequality, in which political resentments, in which strong rhetoric is holding sway. And none of those are his strong suit.
Bruce, thanks for that. We've just had a Shapiroette with Bruce Shapiro, which is what we do on Tuesdays. And as ever, a delight.